For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
And we bring in Georgia baseball coach Scott Strickland. We normally do this on Thursdays, but a scheduling conflict, no big deal. And coach is nice enough to join us today. Coach, we do appreciate it. How are you?
I'm doing fine, thanks. Wish it'd stop raining, but other than that, I'm doing great.
Yeah, but you know, it's funny, and I appreciate the quick text a little while ago. There was no need to drive over there and wait on something that wasn't going to happen. And I'm glad Kennesaw was. In agreement with that. Probably their field, probably their outfield is a disaster too, I would think.
Yeah, I spoke with Coach Sanson yesterday morning and this morning, you know, first thing just to check, because, you know, you've got logistics, you've got meals, you've got buses, you've got kids in class, all different kind of things you got to take care of, so you want to do it early. But yeah, they're just, our outfield saturated, and our outfield drains great.
Yeah.
And it's really, really wet. So even if it didn't rain any more today, it would be tough to play just because the field is so saturated.
You know, it's funny too. It's hard to get a makeup game necessarily with the team that you're. I know they would want Georgia to come over there later in the year, but you know, with the advent of more Thursday games now, it's hard to schedule Wednesday games. It's not as easy as it is. And I know you guys said a makeup date is pending, but that. A makeup date for Georgia might be another team, and a makeup date for them might be another team. Is that safe to say?
I think we're going to find a time to do it. You know, with our games being set, we've got four Thursday series this year, but, you know, looking at our schedule, we actually looked at it yesterday, anticipating this might happen. There's a date in April that we both have open on a Wednesday. The downfall of that is it's in the middle of the SEC season, and, you know, I try to do my scheduling where we have to play twice, two midweek games, Tuesday, Wednesday. We have to do that twice throughout the season to get our 56 in. And I like to do it early just so when we get into the SEC, we're not worn down. So we've only got one midweek game when we play in the SEC. But we're going to have to double up at some point during the SEC season, and that's just the way it goes.
A doubleheader when they come over here is not what they want either, right? So that doesn't help.
Right. Yeah, I mean, if you remember last year and every year when we go over there, it's packed, and we have just as many Georgia fans as our Kennesaw fans, but it's a big game for them, a big gate for them, and, you know, they want their home game, which I get it. I'd be the same way. So, yeah, we're going to go over there at some point, probably, you know, a Wednesday in April.
Your scheduling philosophy, because I talked about this before, about playing Tuesday, Wednesday earlier in the year a couple of times and get that out of the way. What is your scheduling philosophy on the in-state teams besides Tech?
Well, we try to play everybody. You look at it, you know, we're playing those teams home and away, and that's what we try to do. And you can't play everybody all the time, but since I've been here, I think we've played everybody in the state.
And, you know, because I get asked this, would Mercer come back on? Would keep playing Kennesaw, keep playing Georgia State, that kind of thing? I mean, do you guys go schedule? I mean, I know you're more than a year out, but how far out do you set up those games?
Usually about a year out. So, yeah, and anything can happen as far as that goes. We just try to find openings, and, you know, we have teams that we normally play and other teams that we add. You know, this year's Jacksonville State. Their head coach, Jim Case, used to coach at Mississippi State. He's a good friend. So that actually worked, and his daughter is a professor here in Georgia. So he was really excited to try to get that going. So Jacksonville State might be a team that we end up playing home and away here you know, for the near future.
Gotcha. Georgia baseball coach Scott Strickland along with us.
Coach, I wanted to go back to this past weekend against Dayton. Obviously a great opening series for you guys, getting the sweep of the Flyers, and, you know, starting off the season with some good performances. I thought Will Proctor looked very good in his start. And, you know, we got to see the debut of Cole Wilcox, maybe a little bit shaky on the on some of the location, but you can see with that smooth delivery on a 98 mile per hour pitch that guy certainly has a very, very bright future in front of him. So overall, you know, what were some of your takeaways from the weekend, and were you satisfied?
Well, I thought we played very well. When you look at all three facets, pitching, hitting, defense, I thought we were solid all the way around. Friday, offensively, we weren't great, but I thought their starting pitcher did a nice job. The left-handed guy, 91-92, and he really competed on the mound. So overall, I thought we were very good defensively. We fielded 983. We made two errors on the weekend. With fielding a 983 would put you in the top five in the country at the end of the year. Last year, we fielded 979, and that was good for ninth in the country and the best in Georgia history. So we field 983 every weekend and pitch it like that and come up with clutch hits. 455 with runners in scoring position. So if you can do that, you're going to have a really good chance to be very good.
It seems like the nucleus of the infield is going to, you know, knock on wood for, you know, basically everybody staying healthy, but Sully at first, LJ at second, Chunk at third, and Shep at short. I mean, we should be pretty set there, right?
Yeah, I mean, those guys are awfully good, and it's very reassuring for our pitchers, our pitching coach, and everybody. When the ground ball is hit on the infield, the play's going to be made. Those guys are so good and just so steady and reliable. And you know, a guy that's really come on is Cole Tate. Cole Tate has been a guy that's just gotten better and better, and he's won that utility job. Last year it was Trey Logan that had that job, that came in late and, you know, played a crucial role in us winning games in the ninth when Aaron Shunk came in to pitch. Cole Tate's won that job. Cole's a little bit more offensive. Cole's really been swinging the bat. So you're going to see Cole Tate out there playing as well, to give him more experience for the future. But yeah, our infield defense is really, really good.
Hey, that guy is offensive, but that's in a good way.
Yeah.
I was going to say, and the other thing too, though, with when you would bring Logan in, you would move LJ to third. With this situation, you just bring Cole in and he plays third, so LJ doesn't have to move. Is that correct?
Yeah, Cole is. I can put him at second. I can put him at third. I can put him at short, and he's really comfortable. And instead of displacing two guys, or you know, Cole coming off the bench and playing a position and moving LJ, it just makes it easier to bring Cole in and play him at third. And you saw what he can do. He made two unbelievable plays at third base in game two on Saturday. One on a, you know, slow roller that he come in and had to throw on the run, and another pop up that I don't know how he caught it, running straight backwards, catching it over his head, Willie May style, going into the bullpen at a tough angle. It was one of the best plays I've seen made. So really, really good defender, and gives us a great defense behind Shunk on the mound in the ninth inning.
Hey, when you come in, you know, Jeff and I always say the ball finds you, and daggone,
yep,
if it didn't,
did.
And Cole handled it very well. All right, you got any good news concerning Tucker Bradley?
Not right now. He's going to be out for the next couple weeks for sure. There's a shoulder injury there. It's a non-throwing shoulder, which is the good news. But it's just going to be one of those things. Can he swing a bat? You know, that's his bottom hand. That's his finish hand. And when you've got damage in that shoulder, it's really tough to follow through on your swing. And then also the worry of diving again or going up against the fence. We all know the way that Tucker plays. He kind of plays with reckless abandon. With a hurt shoulder like that, there's a chance he can do more damage if he does play and plays the way that he does normally play. So we don't want to handicap him by putting out there and saying, hey, don't dive, you know, don't swing as hard as you can. That's not the way. He's not going to be able to be successful that way, and it ended up probably hurting us in the long run. So we're going to wait a couple of weeks, do some rehab, see if we can strengthen that thing, and make a decision on what we're going to do here in a couple of weeks. But, you know, right now it's not great news.
I noticed, well, you had told us after the game this week, I guess after the second game this weekend, that CJ was going to start as the pitcher Tuesday. And I noticed in the game notes y'all had switched it to Elliott. So CJ was going to be it taken. I mean, how is that because of the Bradley thing with CJ being back in the outfield?
Well, not necessarily.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if that's what that was.
Yeah. Both Tim and CJ have, you know, been fighting for those midweek positions, and we just made the decision. We kind of flipped it that, you know, Tim is going to get that start. CJ was going to throw in relief in this game. It was almost going to be like a split start between those two guys. And Chaney Rogers was going to play left field against a right-handed pitcher. If it would have been a left-handed pitcher, probably would have been Randon Jernigan. So, you know, those young guys played really well when they came in. They've been really good in inter squads. They're great athletes. and they've been swinging the bat. So we've got depth. We've got guys to back him up. There's certainly going to be a time when you're going to see Tucker Maxwell and C.J. Smith in the outfield at the same time. But you've also got Connor Tate. You've got Randon Jernigan. You've got Chaney Rogers. A lot of different options that we can move around. But next week when we play those two midweek games, you're going to see Tim start a game and most likely C.J. start the other.
Gotcha. Talking with Georgia baseball coach Scott Strickland.
Now, Coach, you know, this is a team that obviously, you know, you're replacing a lot, but you're also, you know, bringing up some guys that, you know, made of redshirt. You know, we talked about, you know, Riley King and a guy who's come really, you know, come along really well and played well. But of all the guys that were, you know, on this team last year, you know, who's the one that may have, if there is one, or there may be more than one, that may have just surprised you out of the gate here with how well they've started the season?
Well, you know, Riley's the obvious one, and just because, you know, no one really knew who he was, you know, just as far as the makeup of our team. He had six career at-bats. He redshirted his freshman year and just got a couple of bats late in games early in the year last year. But, you know, he didn't even make trips last year. He wasn't on a 27-man roster until, you know, maybe late in the season. So he's a guy that just can continue to work and work and work. And, you know, in the fall right away, he was that guy like, whoa, he made a jump. He got better. He's finally healthy. And, you know, all his hard work has paid off. You know, some other guys, you know, Chaney Rogers has made a jump. He came in as a two-way guy. He's focused more on being just a position player here as of late. And he's really made a jump. Connor Tate has made a jump. I'd say out of the returning guys, Cole Tate may have made the biggest jump. He's just so reliable defensively. He's gotten better offensively. He's got more power. He's gotten stronger. So if I had to say one guy out of the returning guys, taking Riley King out of the equation, I'd have to say probably Cole Tate.
Sam touched on it a moment ago, but wanted to get you to talk a little bit. The starting pitching was really good this weekend.
Yeah, it was. I mean, Emerson was, first pitch of the game was 97 miles an hour, and I mean, just sat 94 to 96 the entire game. No hitter into the seventh. You know, the one stat that was a little odd was the low strikeouts with that kind of stuff, but you look at it, Dayton was just swinging early. They didn't want to get the two strikes. His pitch count, I mean, he could have conceivably gone nine if we were going to push him a little bit. We weren't going to do it. I might have got some boos from the crowd to take him out, you know, after the seventh or eighth with a no-hitter. But, you know, he was creeping up in that pitch count. If he throws a clean seventh inning, then he would have come out of it, you know, would have been 78, 79 pitches. We could have put him back out there in the eighth, but he was going to come out regardless. But Dayton was swinging really early. They didn't want to get the two strikes. They were trying to swing at that fastball as soon as they could and made a lot of quick outs. And then Will Proctor, 9 strikeouts, no walks. Tony Losi, 10 strikeouts, 2 walks. Swing and miss type of stuff. And, you know, just overall, a really good outing by all three guys.
And, you know, as far as pitch counts go, but, you know, Hancock faced 23 batters. Proctor faced 20 batters. Losi faced 21 batters. So the consistency there in your starting pitching. By the way, a new guy that we hadn't seen before, I know a lot of people are interested in out of Folkston, is Jack Gowan. Explain these different arm slots that he likes to throw from.
Well, it's a nightmare for a right-handed hitter, I can tell you that. When you don't know where it's coming from, it can go over the top, it can go all the way from the bottom, and it can go somewhere in between. And, you know, the thing that Jack needs to work on is just being a little bit more consistent. But I can tell you, in InterSquad, our right-handers, when they see the lineups and they see that Jack Gallant's pitching for the other team, our right-handed hitters groan. They do not want any part of that. It's not comfortable at all. If Jack can be a little bit more consistent in the strike zone, he's going to be a huge part of what we're doing. He's going to pitch, and right now we just need to get him in good spots to get that confidence up. But he's a future closer for us. We feel like that he's going to be that guy from, you know, in the future, maybe next year and beyond, of being that ninth inning guy for us.
And Sam also mentioned Wilcox. The line score wasn't pretty, but, you know, it was his first game, and I know he was jacked up to be on the mound, but what were your thoughts and, like, where you think he kind of falls, you know, at least in the next few weeks as how we'll see him?
Well, a little bit of the same. His role is going to be, at least for this weekend, is to come in and, you know, pitch out of the bullpen, and maybe just face right-handed guys to begin with. We just need little doses of success. And, you know, for freshmen, that's important to have that success. He threw, he got two outs in the eighth and was really good, up to 98 miles an hour. And he ran into some trouble in the ninth, got the ball up in the zone, fell behind in the count a little bit. But you know what? That's the freshman. It happens to freshmen. Very rarely do you see freshmen just come out and just dominate. So the stuff is there. He's really, really a hard worker, and he's really competitive. So all those things put together, I don't worry about Cole's future at all. You know, short term, you know, he's fighting himself, and you know, sometimes you question yourself, but he competes so hard and he works so hard, he's going to be just fine and going to be a major part of what we're doing.
Talking to Georgia baseball coach Scott Strickland.
Coach, you know, we saw the opening, you know, opening weekend for everyone. And, you know, I ask you this, you know, question a lot on here, but I'll phrase it again for this year. You know, you've got going into the season, depending on which rankings you're looking at, the number one, number two, number three team are all in the SEC. So, you know, with you guys obviously coming off of hosting a regional and wanting to improve on that, this is definitely a tall task in front of you.
Yeah, it's never easy in this league. Every single weekend's a war. I mean, Tennessee is a lot better. If you've been following, Tennessee's played four games, and they haven't given up a run yet.
Wow.
They're 4-0 with a zero ERA and zero runs at all. So they're going to get better. Like you said, 1, 2, and 3, LSU, Vandy, and Florida, whichever ranking you look at. We play them all here at Foley Field, but number one, number two, number three in the country, teams that we're going to play. And it's just every single weekend is a war. You've got 30 of those games. It's basically survival of the fittest. And that's what you're trying to do is survive and get yourself in a good position to host at the end. But it is a challenge. That's why everyone wants to be in this league. Just because it's so good, it's the best league in the country, hands down, and it's just always a challenge.
Hey, Coach, congrats. You and Coach King both made it through every inning this weekend. So as far as the batters getting hit by pitches, that kind of thing. And I'll tell you what, the umps, when they went to the review, they were back out on the field really fast in the between innings. They said they were going to, you know, put an emphasis on getting the guys in the batter's box really fast, and they certainly did. So I like I don't know if it was just one of those situations where it just happened to work out this weekend, but I like what they did with the pace of play on those two instances.
Yeah, I think it was a couple of things. Number one, I think our, you know, now the review process is a little bit more familiar. You've got, when the umpires get in there, it's queued up for them a little bit quicker. They know what they're looking at, and they make a quick decision. Now, the other thing was this weekend we had two cameras. So it was impossible. And Shane Marshall, I think, was out at first base in that rundown. He got tagged.
Yeah.
But there was two camera angles. There was no way to see it whether or not he did get tagged. So, you know, I think it was a combination that the replay guys did a better job. It's queued up. It's ready to go. But also, we just didn't have very good angles. They looked at it and said, geez, we can't see anything. Well, you can't overturn it. So, you know, talking about, you know, you brought up the hit-by-pitch strike. That happened three times this weekend at other games, and twice the scenario that I talked about. 3-2 count, two outs, ninth inning, tying or winning run at the plate. A guy gets hit in the shoulder in one instance. A guy gets hit in the thigh in the other instance. Obvious balls, but they twitched a little bit instinctively to roll into the pitch. Dead ball, strike three, game over.
Oh.
It ended like that, and both coaches got ejected for the next game because they lost their minds. It is the dumbest rule in the history of baseball, and I don't know who came up with it and who okayed it. I didn't vote on it. I didn't even heard of it until they told us it was a rule, and it is the dumbest thing I've ever seen or heard, and it happened to three teams this weekend. And I tell you, if it happens to us, I will be up with you in the booth.
Oh, that'd be good. But not in that instance. But who were the two teams where the coach had to miss the next game?
It was Pepperdine played somebody. Pepperdine, the call went in their favor.
Okay.
I don't know who they were playing, but it was Northwestern State and Houston. The Northwestern coach. It's actually Coach Gaspard's son-in-law is an assistant coach on that team. Taylor Dugas used to play at Alabama.
Yeah, yeah.
Is on that coaching staff. And he gave us the rundown of what happened. And, you know, the ball hit the kid in the shoulder. And timeout, that's a strike. And it hit him in the shoulder. And it was with the winning run going across. It's 3-2, two outs, bases loaded. I mean, the worst scenario, and I don't know what an umpire is thinking to make that call, but it's got to be changed. I was Sunday with the day off. I was able to watch a lot of these games. I was getting all this information, and I was wearing out our umpiring crew chief. Look at this. Here it is. I told you it was going to happen, and I'm sure he was tired of me on Sunday, but it just is an awful, awful rule.
There's no way that rule would be changed in the during the season, is it?
I don't know. The answer that I got is was the cycle doesn't come up for two more years. But I think if we all protested, we can get something changed. But it's just a brutal rule. And, you know, if the umpires are – their job is to enforce the rules, it puts them in a really tough spot. And, you know, if they see a kid lean in just a little bit instinctively and the ball is, you know, at the kid's top of the shoulder – technically, we're supposed to call that a strike, and that's just insane, and it puts the umpires in a tough spot.
Yeah, it is, because, yeah, making them try to decide what the intent or, you know, what they were doing, I know that's tough. Well, Coach, I know we've – I don't want to get into the forecast. It's supposed to be rain this weekend. We'll deal with it as it comes. But congrats on the good start there against Dayton. Sorry we don't have a midweek game, but UMass Lowell rolling in. I know they gave up a lot of runs to Arizona this past weekend. So I guess that's one thing is, you know, the players know that too. So you got to keep them, you know, from getting too, you know, too high when an opponent like this comes in. But you guys do a great job of doing that. So we'll see how things go.
Yeah, you never know. I mean, UMass Lowell last year went into Wake Forest and beat them and, you know, went to Vanderbilt and gave them a couple really good games. So you just never know in baseball. A pitcher gets hot. Anything can happen. You can't take your opponents for granted. So we'll be ready to play. And, you know, just like our guys in game three on Saturday, we could have easily, hey, we beat these guys twice. We got them. And I told them there's no way that we're going to cruise through this game. And I thought our guys came out with a lot of intent and got the job done.
Absolutely. And I thought, too, I know we talked about this, y'all seized a momentous play there in that game where you know, it was still close and they had some bad base running and mm-hmm. got a double play out of it and then turned, then got in the dugout and got a 7-run inning. And that was great to see.
Yeah, that was a crazy play, and the game does shift the momentum. It's crazy how it happens. But, yeah, run on third, nobody out, and we end up getting a double play, and they don't score, and we score 7 runs the next inning. So you got to take advantage of mistakes, and you got to capitalize. So I thought we did that.
The old 5-2, 5-4. Yeah, just see those every day.
5-4 double play. Yep, that is. I think that's the first one I've ever seen, I think.
We probably won't see it again, so that was cool. All right, Coach, thanks so much. Appreciate you shifting your schedule around to us. By the way, happy birthday from this past Sunday. You got the day off for your birthday, so.
Yep, 29th birthday.
There you go, absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, feel great.
Thanks, Scott. We'll see you this weekend.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, Georgia baseball coach Scott Strickland.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.